it's usually like in a corner of the rear window, but whenever you see the red, yellow, green profile Bob Marley.
Oh, yeah.
You're sticking that in your car?
Why? What are you...
What, are you just saying, please ticket me?
Yeah. Pull my ass over.
You know? Yeah. It's like, what are you thinking?
That's reasonable... What is it? The
probable
way they can
cause.
Probable cause. Yeah, right? Yeah. Like you got, if you're in a state where weed is illegal and you got a pot leaf on your fucking car,
I don't even really care
cause.
If it's legal.
Search the goddamn car.
I don't even care if it's legal. You think cops are like, no, he just is really into pot. I don't think that he's stoned.
Yeah, you see one of those and that person didn't signal for 100 feet before changing lanes, you know you're getting pulled over. I mean, you should just have your license and insurance. Who am I kidding? You don't have a license or insurance.
Insurance, probably.
Like, boom. Okay, you're getting pulled over. Just get used to it. And then you're going to cry out that the man's out to get me.
Just so funny. I don't get it at all. Like, and we all know that I love the weed world. It's still just, I'm not throwing fucking deadhead stickers or weed leaves on my car, even now.
Yeah, but if you couldn't figure out that, like, your car is not the place to, like, really express
who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. So take down the American flags, too, y'all.
No, I think if you have an American flag, you probably don't get pulled over.
No, that's the problem.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
if you just can't figure it out, I mean, just, like, figure it out.
I mean, I had this guy working for me once. He didn't really speak English. And he starts, you know, bitching to me that he keeps getting pulled over. And I was like, well, you want to know what it is?
He's got some hoopty with mariachi music on or something?
In the back window, he had a tinted black back window with one of those rainbow metallic things that said La Raza. And I was like...
Well, there's a problem.
There you go. There you go. First of all, it is a very questionable, you know, possibly kind of racist sticker. But second of all, it's like something cops really don't
are
like.
Going to look at.
You know, right or wrong, I really don't care what you think.
Or the little assholes with their fucking, like, such and such motorsports across the windshield of their Honda or whatever. Are you just asking? Like, if you go 2 miles over the fucking speed limit.
Yeah.
In one of those things, I'd pull your ass over because you're just going to try and zip away and you're, you know.
I mean, there's some things like you just have to do, even though it isn't your own personal expression. If you're driving a car, you want to look as square as possible. Just like if you're applying for a mortgage, don't come in the Bob Marley shirt.
Or your fucking robe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't be dressing like the dude.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Now, that might not be your personal thing, and you should have freedom of expression. Fine, go ahead and don't get a mortgage or get a ticket.
But it's not the man getting down on you. It's not living up to society's expectations.
Yeah. This is the equivalent to Michael Jackson showing up to court in his pajamas.
Which he did.
Exactly. Okay.
I mean, you gotta look at it like...
They were nice-ass pajamas. They probably cost what this house did, but, you know...
There's just certain societal expectations, because, like, you gotta look at it this way. Like, you know, if you were going in and asking for investment advice, would you want somebody wearing a Bob Marley t-shirt advising you?
No.
Nah, probably not. Walk out. Probably not. You know, if you get arrested, do you want to get arrested by a guy in, like, the Bob Marley t-shirt? I mean, it'd be kind of funny, but...
It would be hilarious. Yeah, but, I don't know, people would film it.
Are we in Jamaica?
How much are you going to, like, respect the authority there? Like, you know, you're going to really trust it? Just some guy comes up and it's, like, license on ID, and he's in, like, some flip-flops and a Bob Marley t-shirt. You're not going to be, like... You know, get out of the car. Like, are you going to get out of the car with that guy? I don't think so.
No.
Yeah.
After you quit laughing, you're going to drive off.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you want to
Maybe not even after you're done laughing.
Right.
You want to see some effort on his part, just like he wants to see some effort on your part. Like, you know.
Try and act sober if you get pulled over for a DUI. At least try to act sober. Doesn't work. But try.
I mean, because it could be worse. I mean, think about it, like, you know, getting pulled over by a drunk cop. That would be worse.
You know, I bet that's happened a lot.
I bet it happens a lot.
And we just never hear about it.
I bet it's a big goof. Like, hey, man.
They're down at the station.
Yeah,
house.
Yeah. Let's get drunk and pull people over for drunk driving.
We only got to go 1 mile at a time to get them pulled over, right? We just pull them over and then sit there and wait for the next one. Mm-hmm. Another mile. I like this. Let's become cops.
Well, and if they're drinking while driving. Right? If they have an open container with them, you just automatically get to restock your liquor cabinet every time, you know?
There is something I haven't ever understood about that. It's like, it's illegal to drive with your cell phone in your hand, but a cop can have a whole goddamn computer multi-screen setup.
That's an old one.
I don't get it. It makes
Welcome
me
to
angry.
Qualified immunity.
Yeah. I don't qualify for any immunity. And on that really poor note, should we go, guys?
Sure, why not?
Ladies and gentlemen, everyone else listening, we are Ruined Heroes, a weekly free and self-produced podcast wherein the three of us irreverently discuss a topic of societal renown. I, Tyler, study like a guy who might be shining. John?
Karnak says this is going to be a long day.
Oh, shit. Is this another shitty episode?
And Rupert.
I don't have any Bob Marley
anything
stickers.
More than that.
I don't have any Bob Marley stickers on my car.
You probably don't even have a Bob Marley album in your collection.
Several.
Really?
Yeah.
Shit. You got me beat. I got one. No, I got two.
Like, bought at the time.
They on cassette.
Not like
yeah, I bought
after
them.
The fact.
Well, I bought them in the 80s, so not quite at the time, but, well, Legend was new when I got it.
No,
actually, that was a gift.
I bought mine when, like, you know, reggae was, like, the most popular white music there was.
All right. Please subscribe and leave good ratings and reviews on whatever podcast feed you get us through. It's free for you. It helps us with publicity and shit. To interact with us, we are ruinedheroespod@gmail.com, as well as easily found on Facebook and Twitter, where you get weekly hints. Say hi. Take guesses. We like all that stuff. In fact, since we're technically on break right now, people commented on the "we aren't even posting an episode" post today, which is nice. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. If you'd like to contribute toward the cost of the show, you can subscribe at patreon.com/ruinedheroes and get extra content starting at just $1 a month. There are links in the show notes as well as on our website, ruinedheroes.com, where you can also find older episodes. Thank you to those of you who do give. What are you staring at so intently? Both of you.
I never knew that the back of a Jägermeister bottle has the most hippie shit ever written on it. It's the most hippie thing I've ever read. Oh. Jeez. It's very patchouli and...
57 herbal things or whatever it is. 56. How many is it? Yeah.
56 hand-selected botanicals. The botanicals undergo a gentle maceration process to extract
gentle masturbation processes.
The precious essence, which is refined, harmonized in oak barrels. Our master distiller completes the ritual blending process to ensure the complex and balanced flavor of our herbal liqueur, Jägermeister.
Good content.
Straight out of country fair, man. Wow, come here, Uncle John's band.
All right, a intro? These are all said by the topic.
How suck is this going to be?
I don't know, it's going to be that bad. They're all said by the topic.
And something I could conceivably know.
It's something you definitely know, and in fact, a little bit more your generation than mine, but spanned a number of generations.
Yeah.
My giving advice on marriage is like the captain of the Titanic giving lessons on navigation. Which made me think of you.
Liz Taylor.
Mm-mm. But you're in the right wheelhouse. You're in the right arena. I have an ego like anybody else, but I don't need to be stoked by going before the public all the time. Which was surprising to me because he's a very well-known person.
Jack Nicholson?
No, but you're still kind of in the right wheelhouse. My producer really gave me something I needed for Christmas. He gave me a gift certificate to the law offices of Jacoby and Myers.
Oh, wow. They were a big TV advertiser. What did they do?
Divorces.
Huh.
Mainly divorces.
Oh, wow. Johnny Cochran?
Oh, God. So close. You're half
oh,
right.
Oh, man. Oh, I thought you had it.
I know a man who gave up smoking, drinking, sex, and rich food. He was healthy right up to the day he killed himself.
Johnny Carson?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't done
We have not done Carson. Nope. Nor will we ever be invited on. So biography sources, biography.com, imdb.com, notablebiographies.com, actually two different notable biography links. Born John William Carson in Corning, Iowa, to parents Ruth and Homer R. Carson, and if those aren't the most plain farm town names I've ever heard. On October 23rd, 1925, he was the middle child of three boys. Although the family was essentially a farming family, Dad also held a job as a manager at a power company. Around the age of eight, the family moved to Norfolk, Nebraska, and the young John seemed a decent student, if not a bit shy. It is said that around the age of 12, he discovered a book on magic. My guess is the library, but either way, it sparked an interest in performance, and he soon ordered a magic trick kit, like the kind you would get off the back of a comic book. And an ad for a comic book magic trick kit is one of the Facebook hints, because why isn't it? Why not? It was not long until he got his first gig, a magic show at 14 years old. He got paid a small sum to do a magic show for the Norfolk Rotary Club. Low-rent show. He followed this up by performing for his mother's bridge club, even more low-rent, and moved into church socials. So I don't know if this is climbing the ladder. I think this is descending. Either way, they were all done under the name The Great Carsoni. Carsonini. Carsonini. But I mean, he's 14. Don't require much for creativity. You guys got to pick it up.
So not The Great Carnac?
Not The Great Carnac. Not yet. I don't know that I threw The Great Carnac in here, actually. I wrote this a couple weeks ago, so who knows what I put in here.
I always thought that the Carnac bit was the stupidest thing ever. I was like, this is so dumb.
It was funny, though.
I didn't think it was that funny. I was like, I don't know, this is like Cards Against Humanity, but like advertisers are paying for it.
Well, I found out a lot of it was like that. It's like, you're just sitting there, you're watching it, and it's, you just see that ship sinking further and further, and nobody's willing to jump off and get into a life raft. And the bit keeps going and going and going. It's like, you know, dead silence would be better. You know, dead silence on air would be better on a live show than continuing with this skit.
It was a time when skits ran for a longer period than they do now, you know. Our attention span's way shorter now as humans. We're just shittier at being people, I guess, or whatever.
Or it was just an overly long, boring sketch.
That's entirely, but mm-hmm. We also didn't have as much to do. Like, if you put on a sketch like that now, people be Twitter scrolling too quickly. You got to be quick about your shit nowadays.
Back that's then, because nobody there has was an nothing, attention span.
There was nothing the fuck else to do then.
I don't think that's true. You got like Dave Chappelle and all these idiots doing like 90-minute comedy specials all day long, all over Netflix.
Yeah, well, Chappelle, fallen out of grace, hasn't he?
That guy. He's, like, huge.
Yes, but he's fallen out of grace with all the trans shit. It's not been good publicity lately. It's been publicity.
Do you think he cares?
No, he's making money.
Yeah.
No, I don't think he cares.
He doesn't give a shit.
I don't think anybody's making money.
All of his career has been spent doing things to piss people off so that he can do more 90-minute specials where he pisses people off.
I hear you, but he's come at a particular community that doesn't want to be come at any longer. It's been not great press.
He's come at every community.
So anyhow, as Carson approached his high school graduation, World War II was in high tilt, and Pearl Harbor was bombed. This supposedly inspired the young Carson to join the U.S. Navy. It is said that he never saw any battle and got a post as an entertainer. Apparently much of his shtick then was ventriloquist work with his dummy, Eddie, which, again, pretty fucking low rent, but
that was the big thing back then.
There was lots of that.
It was like Edgar Bergen and all that stuff.
Yeah. Lamb Chop. Yeah. There was lots of that kind of
shit. Well, and
you
still have What's-His-Face, the one that you saw in...
Jeff Dunham.
Yeah.
Guy is funny. It's clean comedy. And it is, but it's funny. And I did go see him in a fucking stadium.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
So what's that telling you about ventriloquists?
Apparently at least one of them is making money.
Yeah. Evidently so are all of his ex-wives. I think that that's the thing that we need to continue with here. When you're bringing the dummy to bed with you, you cannot call your wife the dummy.
Yeah, if anything I've learned from doing all this research over the years, it is don't marry or date a comedian. Because it's even shorter lived than you expected it to be.
No, I think they're all really depressed people.
A lot of them seem to be.
You know, basically a comedian is a small step up from a clown. And
sad clown syndrome is something. It actually is a thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there is some stories that say he may have been involved in decoding of messages as well, but really I bet he was just more of an entertainer with his doll Eddie. After the war ended, Carson was sent home and enrolled in college immediately. He got his degree in radio and speech in a reported 3 years from the University of Nebraska. His final thesis
was... That's a degree?
Yeah. Radio and speech. Mm-hmm. Apparently, it's Nebraska.
They call it communications now. They would call it communications now.
That's... Okay. Good point. He's probably right.
Like journalism?
Maybe. Like, journalism's going to be hard to get now because print papers are dying. But
these things where it's like... You ran out of things people could accept as degrees and wanted to add some things on the menu. And now...
Not everybody can be an electrical engineer, Rupert.
I'm saying
that... It's just like, do you really... What the hell are you studying to be, like, a journalist? What are you studying? Like, what, sentence structure?
You take some writing courses, I'm sure, yeah.
Shouldn't you have had that in high school?
I took my college writing courses in high school. Who the fuck do I know?
Like,
I got to college, they're like, oh, you don't have to take any more writing. You already passed all that.
Yeah. I mean, like, besides which, like, even if you do...
And look what I do with it now.
Like, I mean, like, what? It seems like, okay, so a year of learning to write, and? Like...
Next.
This doesn't seem like a four-year thing.
Interview class. I wonder what interview class is like.
How to do be Barbara Walters kind of
thing. Yeah, yeah. I don't even Barbara Wawa shows up and...
I wouldn't even be surprised if they didn't have that. But they have a whole bunch of stuff like journalistic ethics.
There is probably a ton of shit like journalistic ethics.
Journalistic. Epistemology.
Legal concerns.
Psychology. Sociology.
Yeah. But, like, you ever see anybody who's like
still is sounding like a Bachelor of Arts degree.
Oh, and, yeah, it's going to fit into arts. Yeah, it'll fit into the arts section. Big time.
Do you ever see anybody, like, broadcasting the news? And you're like, man, you really got to go to college and study for that.
Nah.
Like, really? I don't think so.
So his final thesis was titled, How to Write Comedy Jokes. If... That isn't a capper on what we just riffed on. I don't know what is.
How to write comedy jokes.
That's his thesis.
Well, you've got, like, redundancy right in the title. So writing was not...
I just quoted that.
But, like, how to write comedy jokes, like...
Uh-huh. What, could it just be how to write jokes or how to write comedy? Jokes,
one or the other.
Yeah.
It's like he just...
But no, how to write comedy jokes.
He double-spaced this thing.
Oh, we all double-spaced everything back then, man.
He double-spaced things.
They said so many pages, double-spacing is the way to go.
Used a lot of adjectives.
When they got the word count, that's where the adjectives came in.
Yeah, wow.
Didn't even have an app for that back then. I used to have to manually count the words. That sucked. Now I just, like, click a button that says, so many memories.
Microsoft Word automatically keeps a total for you.
Oh, I can bring it up so it would keep a total, but it doesn't matter because it's the only shit I really write every week. So who fucking cares how many words are in it? Neither one of you are going to scold me.
I remember going through it, like, $4.99,
uh-huh.
$500.
Shit. I got an ad of the somewhere.
Then half an hour later, it'd be $49.99, $500, $5.23. Another half an hour, $5.50. Oh my god, it could be forever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's how many, like, it was the
this
worst.
Is supposed to be 4,000? Fuck.
At least I was of an age where I was doing it on a computer screen so I could scroll through it. Well, we didn't really scroll, we clicked back then, but...
My mother did everything on a typewriter.
Yeah.
I mean, that shit, when she was writing her, it's like, oh my god.
Or the early days before I had computers at home when I was longhanding shit and counting words. Oh, fuck.
Yeah, I remember typing and that caressable paper.
Oh, man.
And then you'd run out and you'd be like, oh, shit, now we're going to the paper where I need whiteout. Oh, man. That sucked. Because then you'd have to put the whiteout on and wait. You were just in a holding pattern. I'm literally waiting for paint to dry.
You were. Yep. And you're hoping that you got it on the right letter.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's, when you're putting it in there, just click. Please.
Those what? Were the days.
Oh, no, you're the talking tape. The correcting ribbon.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
That was
no,
a step up.
That was a step up. I'm talking the nail white polish.
Out, the nail polish style brush. Yeah.
We actually have one thing of white out at work, and it's in the little pen, so we can actually.
Oh. So you can alter your books?
No, well, you know, I would have a very, very large problem doing that unless I was planning on doing it on the screen.
We have it in rolls. They make like little rolls of whiteout tape now.
Mm-hmm.
It's bonkers.
Yeah, I remember I got a typewriter like where it had correcting ribbon in the cassette or something.
Ooh.
And you could just go backspace, retype.
That was when they figured out that they could charge more for the fucking shit that we used to put into the device.
That's
than
right.
The device.
That's right.
It was the beginning of the.
The beginning of the $50 print cartridge thing, trip. Yeah.
Oh. Not the glory days. So, he almost immediately, after getting out of college, got a solo radio show. It was called The Johnny Carson Show. Surprise, there's going to be a theme on that one.
In Nebraska.
Yes.
Yeah.
It premiered on August 1st in 1949. It was a 45-minute morning show where he would read the news and sprinkle it with comedy. It was an instant success for... All right, I don't know how they got these call letters. WOWAM. That's too many call letters for a station, right?
Yeah.
But that's what it was called. Wow AM. And it was in Omaha, Nebraska.
Huh?
Yeah, I don't know how you get five call letters.
KWOW. And then AM. That was probably just the name of his show. It's the AM
well,
show.
It was WOW. Oh, maybe
that's
that was the name of the show.
It's KWOW in the AM.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. But it was listed as WOWAM, which I thought was a weird
name. Wow AM would be the name of the show, but KWOW.
Okay. That makes sense. What are you staring at now?
Yeah, so the three letters were O-W-A, and then they just stuck the M on it, be like A-M.
W-O-W-A?
Yeah, that was probably the official assigned.
Yeah,
because
it was Nebraska. No, Nebraska's this side. It's got to be...
No, I think...
No, it's a K. It's not a...
I don't know about that. No, if it starts with a W, it's...
It's Eastern.
Yeah.
But Nebraska's this side of the Mississippi, and I think that's the line.
I don't know that that's the line.
I think we're in the weeds.
I think the line could be...
I can't see the road any longer.
Right, it's KWOW.
Pretty certain we're in the...
AM 1600.
Okay.
KWOW AM 1600. Coming to you live in the morning with Johnny Carson.
It doesn't work.
KWOW AM 1600.
Well, that's the thing that always bothered me about Blue Velvet is because the movie the movie starts off with a radio announcer saying this is WOOD
in
the
and
Pacific
in
Northwest. No, they're in Washington.
Is it Washington?
Yeah.
Then I got to revisit that movie.
And it starts off WOOD, where we really do know how much wood a woodcut chucks, and then there's a chainsaw, and that's like the opening of the movie. Yeah, and. It's wrong.
It is wrong. So, in October of the same year, Carson married his first wife, Jody Wolcott, W-O-L-C-O-T-T. The couple would have three sons, Christopher, Corey, and Richard, during a rocky marriage. Johnny's coming up, and infidelity by both parties was kind of the end of it. But neither one of them were really good at staying on the right bed. That's the way the story is told. Carson took that success the success from his morning show and headed for California. It took months for him to land a job, but KNXT gave him a shot reading the call letters, weather, and the time. So he was just the voice of KNXT FM. That was his job.
Well, the weather.
The weather. It's fucking raining.
It's California. The sun's out.
Yeah, right. It's 70 degrees.
Oh, I mean, there's all those guys on the morning shows that make a reputation off of weather. Al Roker. Willard Scott?
Willard Scott, okay. Al Roker.
Al Roker made bank off of that. David,
yeah.
David Letterman?
Letterman did weather?
Yeah, that's how he served weather.
Hmm. Well, there's a theme.
Yeah. Big gap tooth guy.
Now
he runs around like Mr. Natural.
Yeah, right? He's all beardy and
shit. I don't know what that look is.
Well, he's got, like, isn't his youngest kid not even a teenager yet or something? And I think he's got 10 or 15 years on you. Like, he's in his 70s or, like,
and
Mick Jagger are the same age and they have kids that could play together.
Yeah, I think he's one of those guys who, like, never stopped having kids. Who's just like, I don't care, I'm rich, I can pay for them.
As long as I can get this up and it squirts stuff, I'm making kids. I don't know.
As long as I can still get it up and my bank account still has money. Right. I can do whatever the fuck I want.
Right?
I can afford the Viagra, and I can afford the child support.
Yeah.
I still got a swimming pool. Shit's fine.
Yeah.
He's just like, you know, what's more expensive, raising a kid or buying a condom? It's like, I don't care.
Do you know how much it costs to send my assistant to the store to buy condoms?
I'm hanging in the $2 a pop range. I'm going to stick with the condoms, yo.
Yeah, but he has to pay the
assistant.
I think
it's the same thing once you're up in his level of money. It really is the same thing. Like,
college education, condom, same thing.
Yeah.
$200,000 is this equivalent to $2.
So,
is that what a condom though, too?
I don't know.
I don't even know how much they are.
I haven't bought any in a little while. I haven't needed them. I think I spent $12 on a pack of 10.
Wow.
Long enough ago that they might be expired now. This is saying tons about my sex life. That's enough. Let's move along.
It's like a dollar a pop. What if it sucks?
Dinner was more than a dollar.
Yeah,
you know, all the more reason to spend a little bit more on the condom.
Ribbed for his pleasure is what I'm looking for, goddamn.
Yeah, whatever happened to that?
I don't know. We figured out that nobody got any pleasure from some bumps and some fucking plastic.
Do they even make those anymore, the rib for her?
I haven't seen them in decades, it feels like. I don't know. I don't know. Speak up, listeners. You seen any lately? You buying condoms?
Because they still make the colored ones, which is like,
yep. That was and the flavored ones are still around.
I never thought would like, I don't even understand. I don't.
That's like, I don't need banana flavored plastic.
It's like,
the whole joke is bad.
I don't. I know I've never used one of the flavored ones, but like, as I was just like,
I did, but not for flavor, just because I was out of other
condoms.
But
if you're sitting there unrolling it, like, none of those flavors are like sexy flavors. Like, it's all like these flavors where it's like, I have a feeling I'm going to smell it sticking it on. And it's like, wow, you know, I really, you know, I was going to fuck you, but now I feel like some ice cream. You know?
Do you want some dessert?
Raspberry coconut.
We
could, like, make a market of, like, niche flavors for condoms, right? Like, rosemary sage.
So what does Walk of Shame smell like?
I don't know, but I don't know if you saw that guy that retired from the NFL by stripping his clothes off and jumping. Like, that's what the Walk of Shame should smell like.
See, I'd come out with condoms that were like, you know, chicken paprikash, lasagna flavored condoms. Lasagna could be kind of a sexy
fresh baked bread. I like spicy things, and I know from experience that putting sauce on your woman's hoochie
the vindaloo
doesn't go over very well.
Maybe the fresh baked bread is not a good one.
Curry, do you want green curry or red curry?
Yeah.
Let's stop with that. I had Indian food.
Man, I can't.
You did have Indian food just the other day.
Evergreen delivers.
That's fucking good ass food.
Why, are they still in business?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's the only place you can afford a half chicken cooked by them is almost cheaper than buying a half chicken in the fucking grocery store. I don't know how they do it, but it's good.
Well, I thought they clipped the owner for tax evasion or something. I thought they were.
It wouldn't surprise me. Restaurant owners have a tendency to not be good at taxes and shit. Anyhow, this work doing the call letters and weather and shit earned him his own show again, this time called Carson's Cellar. It premiered on TV. Many of the characters he would develop on this show would later become familiar to TV to the Tonight Show viewers. The show made it for about a year or two. So that's not bad. You know, you're for... Excuse me. First breakout in TV, you get a year or two. After his show went off the air, he landed a job as host of Earn Your Vacation and spent some time writing for Red Skelton, which that's cool. I don't remember Earn Your Vacation at all. Do you?
Well, it sounds like this was in the 50s.
So the answer is no.
Yeah.
Cool. Moving on. You remember weird shit. I gotta ask you. Like, you remember shit from, like, 1800.
I mean, I remember Red Skelton. He was the most non-funny guy there ever was.
I don't know. He's laying ground for modern comedians.
I only watched him as a kid because I thought his name was Red Skeleton. I was like, man.
That's cool.
That's so metal.
Is there going to be Ray Gun?
G.I. Joe bad guy.
Yeah, I know. Really. I was like, is Red Skeleton on? It's like, Skeleton, you idiot. It's like, Skeleton.
So there's no Ray Guns then?
Yeah.
Nope. No Ray Guns.
Don't ruin
no
my,
spaceships.
Don't ruin
no
my
robots.
Dream, Mom. Because I was like, yeah, I'm going to be known as, like, Black Skeleton.
Right?
Bloody Skeleton.
Semen Skeleton.
Yeah.
That's only after you join the Navy.
Yeah. Tentacle Skeleton.
That's the Japanese Navy.
I like this hentai movie we're writing. So his dedication caught the eyes, again, of network execs, and he signed on with CBS, resulting in a half-hour comedy skit-based show called The Johnny Carson Show. Not real original in his name.
Well, but at this point in time, I mean, if you have the same show over and over and over again, if you build listeners, then you have brand recognition and it can continue going over.
It's fair. I hadn't looked at it from the brand recognition area. I just looked at it from not very creative.
No, he's just naming them after himself.
Over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's making he's making himself a brand.
That's making a name for yourself.
Yeah.
That literally is making a name for yourself. Oh, I got this PVC cement all over.
That's exciting. Oh. So this show, however, suffered because they couldn't keep writers and directors, and it was canceled only after a 4-month run. So it was a pretty short run show.
How many writers and directors do you go through in 4 months?
Like, I don't know. Apparently, all of them.
Like, everybody's got a better gig.
Apparently, all of them.
This makes Cammie Harris's office look like a stable organization.
So upon having this show canceled, he was again jobless in California. So he took a job as the new host of Do You Trust Your Wife?
That's a good show.
Probably not run today.
Wow. That's a good show. Wow, I like that.
It later became Who Do You Trust? So they figured that one out. They woke real fast.
Oh, that sucks.
Wait.
I love Who Do You Trust Your Wife. I'm going to start that show up. You know, anybody wants to hear a podcast called Do You Trust Your Wife?
Oh, my God.
It's going to be, yeah.
You're going to run out of guests real quick, but it's going to be funny.
Are you kidding me? That shit's going to kick Rogan off the air.
I don't know what's going to kick Rogan off the air. He's our modern Alex Jones.
Isn't he the most popular host of anything anywhere?
As far as I know, it is the most played podcast. I don't keep track of that much anymore.
No, I think he has more subscribers than
we do.
Than no, he's got like more. I think he's got more subscribers than like watch any Fox News broadcast. Hmm? Like, it's something crazy.
You may not be wrong. It is insane the number of people that listen to him on the regs.
It's nuts. Like,
and again, he is our modern Alex Jones. He's gone crackpot. I kind of enjoyed him in the
beginning. I don't know anything about him.
Totally bonkers.
Okay.
He's selling silver supplements and
just
shit.
Just on this thing, there's the Joe Rogan Experience as of August 26, 2021. Number one on Spotify with 200 million people monthly.
That's just his Spotify, though.
Yeah, that's...
But if I remember, he did take a contract, like $10 billion or something. Fucking Spotify.
Well, 200 million people monthly, that's like 10 times CNN. Not that that's much of a yardstick these days.
Every single listen that we've had on our podcast does not add up to 200 million.
That barely adds up to two.
Okay, on September 30th of 21... he did lose his top spot on Spotify.
Ooh, to whom?
Yeah.
All right, we might be off on a tangent.
I think we're in the weeds again. Can't see the road, but I'm very curious who he lost his spot to.
Gaming Stars. Carl Jacobs.
God.
And Sapnap.
I don't know if that's
Banter
better.
With Sapnap and Carl Jacobs.
I don't know if that's better.
I think he might have, like, more listeners, you know, than like, you know, Greg Gutfeld or
he's got more anybody. Listeners than God right now, frankly. Something more nuts. People listen to Rogan than go to church. Although there is the Venn diagram is
well, I mean, close 200 million in a month. Like that's, I don't know if that's like unique listeners or anything, but like you know, in a country of 400 million, it's like
that's something. So anyhow, this who or do you trust your wife, which became who do you trust, was on the American broadcasting companies. I said it that way because ABC is also Australian broadcasting companies and shit like that. So. It was on the American ABC. This required him uprooting his wife and now three kids and heading for New York City to work with the big television networks. He did a brief stint in movies and showed up in dramatic roles, appearing in Playhouse 90 a few times, which was a TV show thing, TV show movie thing, as well as shooting a pilot for a show called Johnny Come Lately that never made it to air.
Playhouse 90 was like Rod Serling's first show.
Was it really Rod Serling's first show?
Yeah, that's he did Playhouse 90, then The Twilight Zone.
Nice. Well,
I mean, Playhouse 90 was like considered a very fancy little spot there.
Well, Carson dabbled in the drama world. That
I guess
that.
So.
Over 20 times. I'm sorry. I'm stuck on this Rogan thing.
It's he is over stuck on Rogan.
We do occasionally Rogan's throw him into a groove that he just can't get out of.
Wow. Over 20 times the population of New York City.
Yeah.
That is his Jesus. Monthly listenership. Over 20 times.
Oh, man. I'm worried for America. Again, I liked him.
They're listening to us. We should be worried, okay? Well, the fact that they're listening to us, we need to be worried about America, period.
We are saviors. They're going to be fine because we're just all
over
the place.
Rogan says the same thing.
Yeah, I think he does.
Okay.
So, now in 1951, a show called The Tonight Show had started on the radio, featuring host Steve Allen, who is a Facebook hint. Basically a variety show at the time, it often featured musical acts and comedy skits and was moved to television and hence New York City. In 1954, where Allen continued to host the show. Unfortunately, Steve Allen wasn't really a face built for TV, so he did that for a little while. A few years later, Jack Parr
wasn't
came in.
Worse than Jack Parr.
Again, Jack Parr came in, also not a guy really made for TV. And he took the lead as the host of the show. Parr was polarizing even then, and he only led the show for about 4 years. I mean, he was Rogan-like polarizing. You liked him or you fucking hated him, and that was kind of all there was. He had a quick break in here and apparently replaced a drummer in the American Bandstand band for an episode or two. So Johnny Carson played drums
yeah.
on American Bandstand.
Yeah, he played them every now and then, like on the show or something like that.
Yeah, but I didn't think American Bandstand.
I mean, he was a boxer. He's drummer.
What I left the boxer part out.
Yeah, right. He went 10-0.
Bon vivant, he is. Was.
Was he still alive? I can't remember.
No, he died a few years ago.
I wrote this a couple weeks ago. I'm sure it comes up at the end.
Well, not that recently.
So, near the end of Parr's career, hosting The Tonight Show, Johnny was asked to step in for Parr's vacations. He had definitely gotten noticed yet again. When Parr was dismissed, it was said that to have left to start... it was said he left to start a Friday night show instead of his every night show. But, I mean, like, Parr was essentially canceled before cancel culture. Carson was immediately put to the post as the new host of the now very successful Tonight Show. It was October 1st, 1962, when the first episode with Carson at the helm aired, like as the permanent host.
Man, I always thought that'd be the worst way to go. You go on vacation and come back, and they replaced you.
Yeah, you're right. Done.
That's got to really suck.
That was my last job. I went on vacation and came back, and there was some replacement shit going on, and then I was like big middle finger, but you know. But anyhow,
well, it's
it
a perfect
does
time
suck.
To actually, from a business standpoint, that is a perfect time to introduce that change, because you're gone. It gets somebody else in there. They can get the swing of things. If it doesn't work out, then when you come back,
yeah,
you can slip
right
in.
We still got
you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, not to mention they just spent all their paid vacation hours, so you don't owe them fucking nothing.
Right.
You're learning. No, I learned. So. Although it took most of the first year for audiences to adapt to Carson's style, it was steady growth, and Carson saw success through his subtle, swift wit and unbiased interview tactics. He would not only review characters he had or revive characters he had created over the years, but invent new ones. He would also enlist Ed McMahon, whom he met years earlier. Well done.
You are correct, sir.
Whom he'd met years earlier as his sidekick. He became wildly successful in this new role, but after a few years felt he was not being properly compensated.
McMahon or Carson?
Carson. McMahon was never properly compensated.
You know that pencil that he was always fucking with? It has two erasers on it. Because they were afraid he was going to, you know, just dicking around, he was going to stick somebody with a pointy end. So the studio actually got him pencils with erasers on each end.
The safety stick.
Yeah, basically.
It's actually a baton at that. Nancy boy.
It is like a Barbie-sized baton. You're right.
Nancy boy.
So despite his rise to the top of TV history, his marriage was falling apart. And he and his first wife, Jody, divorced in 1963. Just a handful of months later, he married his second wife, Joanne Copeland, on August 17th, 1963. First note is that this one could easily be called Joe, like both of them, like Joe Jody and Joe Joanne. We're not...
Yeah, we noted
it's a lateral fucking move, right?
Yeah.
The second note is that this marriage made it 9 years and ended in divorce in 1972. So he made it a little bit longer with this one. Copeland was awarded a significant part of the acquired art collection, some houses, $500,000 in cash, custody of the kids, and $6,000 a month alimony settlement.
Wow, somebody didn't pay for a lawyer.
That would last, Carson apparently, that would last until he remarried, or she remarried rather. Or Carson died, so she gets the alimony until she remarries, or he dies.
That's the way alimony worked back then, right? Especially in California.
Yeah. Well, they're in New York here.
Oh,
it's New York divorce.
Wow. Okay.
Showbiz. Period.
Yeah, I thought New York was a little bit better, but no, that's the way alimony worked back then. Yeah. Is like you got it for life. That's how you had these women who like lived with some guy for 30 years without getting married because they didn't want to give up the alimony. It's the biggest fuck you move ever.
She was exactly that woman.
Yep. Uh-huh.
She collected that alimony until his death. She remarried.
Did she get cost of living adjustments on it?
I don't know. I didn't look it up.
Oh, I would be surprised if she didn't.
Exactly. But I mean, still, I think I could live comfortably on $6,000 a month in perpetuity.
As far as the planet's going to last,
a month? Yeah. I could live very, very comfortably on $6,000.
Not in New York.
I wouldn't live in New York.
Also fair.
But I would have a bunch of houses because she got a few of those too.
Mm-hmm.
So she didn't have to just choose New York.
And they had a massive art collection, which you got a good portion of.
It's this fucking game show mentality. Like, yeah, but I was married to you for this long, so I get all this stuff. It's like...
Well, and she did exactly that.
Fuck.
She, like I said, collected the alimony till his death, and then just shortly afterwards married some dude she'd been with forever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we can't get married, honey. We're going to lose $6,000 a month.
Yeah.
They also had no kids, so like the custody she got was of the kids from the previous wife, I guess.
Oh, what?
So it sounds like both wives had custody, or ex-wives had custody. He had no, I don't know.
Wow,
it was very confusing to me. But it sounds like Johnny got fucked in the ass.
Wow.
Now we know why his he was given a gift certificate
to the lawyers. Exactly, because Bob, you're not doing very well with this. With his wild success, Johnny pursued his claims of being undercompensated, and in 1970...
Because he had this much fucking money he had to pay out.
Exactly.
Fuck.
Bills went up, yo. In 1967, he walked off of the set of his Tonight Show, citing a break in contract by NBC by them showing reruns during the AFTRA strike. It was essentially an early actors and writer strike. And everybody went on strike, and so NBC played... reruns, and he called that a breach of contract because they weren't supposed to do reruns of this live, or at least taped to the air show. The result of this risk was that he was handed a 3-year contract that guaranteed him $4 million. This may sound
for
like...
For the whole 3 years.
Yeah.
Ah, yeah, that's not that great.
Well, back then, that's a lot of money. It's 67. $4 million bucks in 67.
It's a lot of fucking money.
Yeah, but it was still, he was like, well, it's a weird slot. Because this was...
It more than pays $6,000 a month.
This was, yeah, this was...
it this covers was, your $6,000 and you can buy some more art now.
He was still on at 11, right?
I don't know. I didn't write down time frames or anything like that.
Back then, it was probably 10-ish.
Yeah, but after 10, your audience is like 20% of what it was before on TV. So, yeah, I don't know. So, you know...
So, yeah, $4
million.
He's
getting $1.3 million a year.
Yeah, whereas before he wasn't even getting a million. He wasn't even getting a million a year before then. I mean, it's not friends' money, but
it's...
Well,
I mean, it depends on whether it was $4 million up front for 3 years or if it was $4 million.
Those friends people, like, they're still waking up. Jennifer Aniston makes $20 million a year off of Friends now.
All of them. They all make the same amount of money off of Friends. That was the contract they signed.
It was the shittiest show ever.
It's an enjoyable show. It doesn't hold up very well, but it's still a funny show. Anyhow, all of this may have sounded like a bit of a money grab, but the ad revenues alone from The Tonight Show were more than 17% of NBC's yearly income.
Shit. That's weird.
One time slot, 17% of the whole channel's yearly income.
That's so weird because, like, you're in this late night time slot. Where your audience has dropped off that much.
But Let's Buy a Toyota is really expensive slot.
You know what it was, though? You know,
so it's 3% of their programming, basically.
Yeah.
But you know what it was? Is like, I think he was absolutely the only thing that you could watch at that time. There was literally nothing else on. I think that's what it was.
I mean, they move later on, they move Letterman into... To kind of
Letterman originally came like after the Tonight Show. He was like the Tonight Show, and then there was like the late show.
Yeah, he was the late show.
He came on a different channel. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I thought that Letterman was brought in to actually combat.
No. Oh, okay. He was on after Carson.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Like there was nothing.
So they knew that they couldn't compete with Carson. Right, yeah, they had to do something else.
That was opposite Carson.
They were hoping that Letterman could maintain. That channel was hoping that they could keep people up that were staying up for Carson.
Yeah.
They would just switch over to CBS.
Over to the next one. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So another part of this deal was that the show, which had been called The Tonight Show, got changed to The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. Mm-hmm. So, like, you want me to show up for the fucking recording? Put my fucking name on it.
Yeah, continue with his branding.
Right. So during the early 1970s, he had gained such social influence that he made a joke about industrial-grade toilet paper that sparked the first ever U.S.-wide shortage on toilet paper as people freaked out and emptied the shelves. So now you know how old that fucking scam is. But yeah, like the first empty toilet paper shelves were because Johnny Carson made a quip and people went and bought all the toilet paper. Carson ruled the late-night TV world for decades after. By the early 1980s, he was reported to making over $2 million a year, making the highest-paid TV celeb of all time at that point. But he continued to beat that record repetitively until he reached over $5 million a year in the early 80s. So, like, from 80, $2 million.
Yeah, that's drug dealer money.
That's crazy money back then.
Yeah, that's Florida drug dealer money.
Yeah, well, fair. Cartel money, yeah. This is when his McMahon-delivered introduction became even more iconic, with Jack Nicholson re-coining the phrase, "Here's Johnny," in Kubrick's The Shining. This gave Carson an unexpected grasp on American culture by being translated into a different genre due to his existing popularity. So I can't think of anybody else that has become... like, that kind of iconic. Just the fact that McMahon said, "Here's Johnny," every night, and then it came up in the Kubrick film was... I can't think of anybody else. Can you?
What, that came up in
that
a
That has
Kubrick
that kind
film?
Of a catchphrase that became...
Well, when Arsenio Hall would fill in for him, that...
Pump thing. Yeah. But the pump thing's gone. People still post memes of "Here's Johnny."
I mean, Groucho Marx.
Okay. Maybe that's a reasonable call.
I don't know.
It's just one of those pervasive things that has just crossed over into different areas.
Yeah.
For it to cross over like that, it's something that has to be memorable, and it has to be something that is just, okay, yeah. I guess it's one of the head scratchers. Why was it so freaking awesome? What made it so cool? Absolutely nothing. Nothing made it cool. Nothing made it special.
The fact that they did it the exact same way every single time. I think that's why. And because clearly a huge number of viewers were watching.
Everybody does it. You do the stuff.
I do the stuff. Yes, it is the Here's Johnny of our day.
Mm-hmm.
So to get back to his personal life, remember he got divorced the second time in 1972? So, rarely missing an opportunity to poke fun at himself and the rumors that surrounded him, at the 10th anniversary party of his Tonight Show, he publicly announced that he had gotten married to a former model named Joanna Holland. Another Joe! That's three Joes in a row, yo!
Wow, I can't quit you, babe.
Well, eventually he's going to get it right.
He had actually gotten married earlier that day. This marriage lasted an official 11 years, ending in divorce in March of 1983. She took off with over $20 million in cash and property.
Yeah.
Carson notoriously commented about this on his show, saying, the quote from earlier, "My producer really gave me something I needed for Christmas. He gave me a gift certificate to the law offices of Jacoby and Myers."
I wonder how much Jacoby and Myers was actually spending on advertising. That was a free gift certificate because they just needed another plug.
Well, I mean, the joke wouldn't have worked unless Jacoby and Myers was a household name.
Exactly. Right.
Everybody had to know the ambulance.
Yeah, they were probably an advertiser.
Mm-hmm.
For Carson.
Well, that was a big thing that had happened was, I think it was in the early 80s, there was something where, like, the American Bar Association relinquished their prohibition on lawyers advertising. For you tots out in the audience, I know you might not be able to imagine this, but there was one point where it was considered tacky for lawyers to advertise because it was...
And you can watch cigarette ads.
It was too much. It was considered too much ambulance chasing, so lawyers just didn't... It wasn't illegal, just lawyers... It was considered unethical for lawyers to advertise, so they didn't. And then the ABA lifted their prohibition on it because all of a sudden we've got too many lawyers. He's got to make some money.
Right.
And next thing you know, Jacoby and Myers was like... And it was always sleazy, you know. It was always like these late night ads.
Well, again, and they're divorce lawyers mainly.
Yeah, but you never saw lawyers advertising in prime time. It was always like late at night. Like, you know, do you have a back injury?
Did you get in an auto accident recently?
Yeah.
Would you feel like you were, or do you feel like you're not being properly compensated for the injuries that you sustained?
Well, think about it. It's the people that are up, depressed, and feeling like the world owes them something, that are angry and frustrated, and they need the lawyer.
They've got nothing better to do, so they're up
at midnight. Now, here's Jacoby and Myers. We'll save the day.
It was the 80s. We had no understanding of mental health and shit. So that was just their target.
They targeted
their fucking advertising.
That was the big shift that happened. Was like in the 70s, it was just like, sandwiches again, honey? Well, you know I can't do much on your salary. Why don't you go to driver's truckers training school?
Oh, God, right? Oh, God,
and so,
right.
Like, in the 70s, all the late...
So I can never see you again.
In the 70s, all the late night ads were, like, learn to be a plumber or a trucker or something. And then the 80s came along, and there were no more vocational ads. They were like, who can you sue? And now, I swear to God, I hear, like, advertisements on the radio now. Well, they stopped a few months ago, but, like, did you use talcum powder?
Right, right.
You know, when
you
that
might be
thing,
entitled to a class action lawsuit.
When that whole thing was going on, that talcum powder caused cancer, and then I think they threw out that verdict, and those ads are gone now. But like, and we're back to the mesothelioma.
Yeah, everything's a 30-minute infomercial on how you can sue somebody because you don't feel good.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And thank God I don't watch any form of broadcast television anymore with commercials. Everything streams. I record it, it automatically cuts all the commercials out, and I can sit there and watch what I want with no interruption of bullshit.
Some of my streaming services have cartoons. Commercials. But I consider them cartoons. They're just brief moments for me to doom scroll. That's all. It says 37 seconds. I can doom scroll for 37
Hulu,
seconds.
Hulu, where you watch the same ad over and over 30 times in the span of an hour.
One TV show.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I listen to the radio, so...
I do. I've been listening to the radio lately, too. There's been lots of ads. The redundancy in the ads is sickening, however.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't know how much it costs for one ad slot to be played every 10 minutes for 5 hours running, but it's got to be cheap because there's a lot of it going on.
So anyhow, at this point, Carson decided to spend about 4 years unmarried, which probably a good decision. Got to clear your head, buddy. You had enough Joes. This was a first for him, as he had kind of married as soon as his parents and the military were no longer taking care of him. You know, we know those kind of people. He married his first, or his, for his final time, in June of 1987, to Alexis Maas, M-A-A-S. So he got out of the Joe realm, finally.
Wow. Hey, so
and the Maas, M-A-A-S, two right, A's.
So, hey, Johnny, did you marry Alexis? Alexis Maas. Si, senor. Wow, I like that name.
Alexis and then some.
Alexis Maas.
He had met her while she was strolling down the beach with an empty wine glass that he offered to refill. The marriage would last until his death. She was literally apparently walking on the beach, and he was sitting on his patio staring at the ocean, and she had an empty wine glass, and he just trotted down and said, hey, can I fill your wine glass for you?
What a whore.
Marriage.
What a whore.
Well, he did love his drink. He loved his drink.
He did like
the fuck is that? That's trolling.
That's
so, why'd you put out the drift net,
that's,
baby?
That's the way dating used to work. Now there's a lot of apologies at the onset of a dating relationship.
Listen, if I'm on the beach and I see you walking down the thing in a bikini with a little empty wine glass, I'm going to be like, hey, whore. You know, I mean, what? That is putting out the drift net.
It worked.
For ridiculous men. So that's good. Like,
well, there's a difference between saying, okay, you know what? I can fill that up with pub beer. Or him sending over a bottle of Dom, okay? Here, let me fill up your glass. Here's a bottle of Dom. Here's what we would do. Well, I've got a pub beer for you. You know, right. Do you want some Jaeger?
I get all this free weed at work.
How the fuck does that...
Yeah.
How the fuck does that even start? Like, I think I'm going to go for a walk on the beach. I need my space. I'll take an empty wine glass in case a kind sir comes along with
some
wine.
I'm a smart person. I take a 32-ounce of mimosas if I'm going for a walk on the beach because it's going
to
be a while.
And that's why nobody comes up to you.
That's because
fair.
Nobody wants a piece of that.
Me, my pit bull, my fucking...
If that and a 32-ounce...
50-50 full of fucking...
If that doesn't just say stay away, I don't know what does.
I'm just like, to talk about privilege. I think I'll just grab a wine glass and some guy will fill it.
Whatever it was.
God!
Fucking worked.
That's privilege in a nutshell.
It was the only marriage that stuck. I mean, granted, he had died to get out of this one, but at least didn't lose any
money.
How
long were they married for before
he died? No, he lost the rest of it. 87
until he died.
No, he lost the rest of his money.
So, like, he died in, 2005
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, like, this is double his record.
Oh, so a quarter
yeah.
of a century? Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
For filling up a wine glass.
That's amazing.
That is, if you were to add up...
That is the longest marriage to a whore I've ever heard of.
If you were to add up all of the relationships, the time frames that we've been in them at this table, I don't know if they hit 25 years.
That's a possibility.
No, if I add up my two marriages, I get 25 years.
Okay.
Not me. Anyhow.
Well, you've never been married.
Well, there's that.
That's a
I
problem.
Was just doing the relationship. This is not a problem. Being married is the problem.
Well, you
as
can't add
noticed.
Up your marriages unless you've been married. It's hard to
I can add up my
said,
long-term relationship.
Nothing from nothing leaves nothing.
Better have something.
It also means no alimony.
Yeah.
It also means no splitting shit, and it means no lawyer.
Yeah, I haven't lost
wait a
my
minute,
art
no
collection
fucked.
Or my houses.
So you
or...
did have a lawyer.
I did have a lawyer. Great lawyer. Anyway, so cruising through the
80s. Art collection.
She loved that paycheck.
Cruising, she did, but she earned it, too.
Yes, she did.
Because there was no arguing with what happened. So
yes,
it
she
was good.
Did. She earned every freaking cent.
So, cruising through the 80s and 90s, Carson was what we all stayed up to watch, and he got global attention for his antics and interviews. He was the inspiration for generations to come, and over his decades as the host of The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, he interviewed around 22,000 guests.
Well, 22,000?
22,000 guests.
Wow, so if you divided that by all the millions, I wonder how much that is per interview.
John's a math guy. And he hosted The Tonight Show 4,531 times. So 22,000 guests.
And 4,531. So that's like five
guests a show almost. I think they may be counting bands or something like that.
No, I could believe he had... Well, no, yeah, because the couch didn't sit five people, especially right. when you got fat-ass McMahon man on it.
Man in the way, exactly.
He had three guests that came for the sit-down, and then he had the other people who came out and did a little bit like a comedian and then didn't sit down on the couch.
Okay.
Remember there
fair.
Was that?
Yeah,
remember?
There was always the comedian, the warm-up comedian guy.
Yeah, there was. And if you were a comedian and you did a bit and you got invited to sit on the couch impromptu, that was a big, huge deal if that happened.
Okay, just going off of his last little $300 million net worth thing,
mm-hmm.
and 22,000 stars, or interviews, $13,636.36 per interview.
I'll make 13 grand for an interview. Fuck yeah. Fire up my other podcast. Let's go.
Yeah, but you'd flip the pencil and stab somebody in the eye.
I might.
Actually, I would have.
I might punch you in the eye.
I would have loved to. Anybody would do that. I would have loved to have seen like Carson like lose it and just stab somebody with a pencil.
It would have been great, never did this.
It seems like it should have happened. You know, I had like John Lydon on and just stabbed him like, I hate you. It's so annoying. Or her.
Well, Pauly Shore. That's easy to say about John Lydon.
Pauly Shore
in person, like in interviews, isn't horrible.
I've heard that he's actually a pretty freaking bright guy.
Yeah, he's smart.
Unfortunately, and you know,
but, it's movies.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Come on, you want to kill that guy, man.
Every bit of public persona is such just irritating little prick.
He's a bit like David Lee Roth in that who he actually is. And who you see him as in public in his performances, very different.
I don't think so. Now you're knocking David Lee Roth.
I know you got a weird hard on for him, but whatevers.
I loved his public persona. That he would just
Pauly Shore was irritating in public. Diamond Dave
was fucking irritating in public.
But he was always fun.
He was always funny.
He was always
happy and having a good time. It didn't matter what the
fuck
he was
doing. If he showed up,
it
looked like it was going to be a good time. Even when they're talking about the breakup of Van Halen, it looked like it was going to be a good time.
Yeah. And Pauly Shore, you're just like, but see, it's kind of like Carrot Top. How soon can I get out of here?
David Lee
Roth. Dude, I saw Gallagher live.
Carrot Top live, okay? Do you know how much I had to drink?
I mean,
that was at the state fair, so it wasn't that hard.
I was in Vegas.
That's a lot to
pay. I ain't doing that shit.
That's a lot to pay.
That was a lot of beers.
So
the thing about David Lee Roth was like, he got kicked out of Van Halen, and then the band kind of sucked after that, and it's like it wasn't even named after him.
I don't know, 5150, I really dig.
No.
That's a great album. No, and OU812 is good, no. And then I lost track after
Well, there's
that.
Form of Cardinal Knowledge.
David, that's earlier. No. If you're saying Sammy Hagar is the same, as David Lee Roth, just you're not living in reality.
I'm not saying they're the same. That Eddie's progression of the synthesizers worked really well for me with 5150 and OUA12.
Wow, I think you're in the minority
but
there.
I am in the minority.
Yeah, like that's usually one of those things. But,
my reasoning is that Alex and Eddie really got together on those albums. Their work on those albums together is phenomenal.
I don't care anymore.
But anyhow, so Johnny Carson is credited often with helping kickstart the careers of giants like Carlin, Letterman, Rivers, Dangerfield, Williams, DeGeneres, and Leno, who eventually replaced his spot at the host desk. So they were all like starter comedians that came up and did that opening spot that we were talking about. And without Carson, many of them may not have a career, but we followed all those people forever. In June of 1991, tragedy struck Carson when his son Richard was killed in a car which went careening down a cliff near San Luis Obispo. That's not correct either. But either
that's
way,
how they say it. They don't say San Luis Obispo.
In that place where they grow San weed Luis in Obispo. California. The story goes, Richard had pulled over to take some pictures, and his car was struck from behind and forced off of the cliff.
At 125 feet, fell.
Yeah. Deed.
The sad thing about it is
so he
the
was
two
drunk,
of them
pulled over to sleep it off and got whacked
because his son inherited his dad's drinking issues, and they came to fucking, well, almost came to blows on a cruise just before that, and they hadn't spoken. So he had not spoken to his son
in a couple of months.
And
then his son is pushed off a cliff.
Yeah, his last words with his son were violent and derogatory and wouldn't respond, wouldn't reach out, wouldn't do anything, and now his son's dead.
Who'd have thought that would happen with drunks?
Hey, shocker!
Well, fair. That's why I don't stand next to cliffs.
Because I'll push you.
How about Bill's?
Only because, you know, I kind of want you to. Uh-huh. Like, I'm done.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just... If you're on a cruise with your son and you both are violently drunk yelling at each other,
somebody's going in the drink.
You might as well just like move into a trailer and put a truck up on blocks in the front yard.
They're trashy. Millionaires. They were already in a trailer.
Trashy. I mean, trashy, trashy, trashy. That is just like so...
Millionaires. Whoa. They were in a trailer. But the there's also a problem with these cruises where you can't exactly leave.
Yeah,
you're kind of in a locked little environment. Yeah, you know?
You can't exactly just get out of the apartment.
Don't matter how much money you have. If you're on a cruise drunk with your child and you're in a coming to blows situation, you are trash.
Well,
take it out. Just throw it overboard. Just throw the trash overboard.
Also, when you've got Carson money... If you wanted a helicopter to come get you, you could probably arrange a helicopter to come get you.
So Carson always, also, clearly by his beginnings, had a long-lived fascination with that's a neat word.
Drink.
Fascination with magic, and he eventually gave Uri Geller, as well as a number of other mentalists, an opportunity to prove their abilities on the show. No one ever proved anything to him or his audience. So, like, Uri Geller would show up on the Carson show and couldn't bend a spoon.
Right.
But Uri Geller could bend a spoon everywhere else. I don't know. He gets a little bit of that Houdini credit for Let's Discredit the fucking sham people.
Well, he always had the amazing Randy on, too. Randy was a frequent visitor to his show and was constant. I think he might have even had Geller and Randy on at the same time. I think he might have. Mm-hmm. Don't hold me to it, but I wouldn't be surprised because...
I think you're correct because Randy did... I mean, he was an early day Penn and Teller kind of. He did lots of humor comedy and exposing of magic tricks and things like that.
Well, he was a big debunker.
Yeah. Which obviously Carson was as well.
Well, it's understanding that you're not special and you don't have magical powers. You're an illusionist.
Yeah, I mean, Randy made a...
Okay, you're an illusionist. You're creating an illusion, and you're...
Randy made a career.
The magic about your magicianship is that you are giving somebody a mystical experience. That you are actually some
goddamn
thing.
He would follow these guys around. Mm-hmm. I mean, he'd pop up with his David Letterman beard at a Uri Geller show and say, "You're full of shit," all the time. You know, that was his...
Nice bring around.
That
well
was
done.
His trademark there.
So, also, while he was hosting his ubiquitous late-night show, he won 6 Emmys, as well as a number of other awards, including a Peabody and the Presidential Medal of Freedom. He got to host the Academy Awards from 1979 through 1984, and by the end of his reign on The Tonight Show, he got to report on Nixon, Vietnam, Reagan, and by the end of his run in 1992... He made an estimated $25 million a year.
Wow.
His final appearance on the...
That's $2 million a month. What the fuck do you do with that?
I don't know. Hoard it like a dragon.
Pay ex-wives?
No, this was...
Pay ex-wives, yes.
You know, you
this was 5 days a week, right?
To up the settlement.
No, he was doing 5 days a week.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was actually like really working.
$25 million a year.
He was actually working a lot more than people with their stupid-ass little weekly show. You show up on a Thursday, cut it on Friday. You know, come on. You know, Carson had to show up every fucking weeknight, you know, to do this thing. It was actual work.
Every single day.
Wasn't he?
Yep. You know. So his final appearance on the show attracted over 50 million viewers. So
just a couple of folks watching a TV show.
And I think we knew it was going to be last show.
We all knew.
Yeah.
And that's why people signed up and watched.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they knew that the new regime was coming in.
Yeah. I know, I didn't see it.
neither did I. So after retiring from The Tonight Show, he toyed with the idea of a new show, but gave it all up and spent most of his time in his Malibu home, as well as sailing around the world on his 125-foot yacht, the Serengeti.
Odd little...
Going to the Wimbledon tennis tourney every single year.
I still can't...
You got that kind of money. Why are you going to go watch tennis every year?
Because, like, I don't understand tennis. Like, there's
that's
people
what I'm worse. Saying.
It's,
like,
it's the sport to watch if you have money. It's really lame.
It's a hoity-toity sport, like polo. But at least polo is exciting. Somebody might get whacked in the head with a very long croquet mallet. Like, that's not going to happen at Wimbledon.
You know, the weird thing is I'm trying to figure out this, like, yacht named the Serengeti. How does that work out?
Confusing.
Yeah,
Cultural appropriation.
Appropriation. Look, let me tell you something. If I got a trail of ex-wives and this 200-foot yacht, you know what I'm going to name it? The Fuck You Joe.
Fuck You Joe 3.
Yeah, and I'm gonna have big letters, and I'm gonna phone ahead. Like, if I'm docking at the
racing stripes.
Serengeti, it's just like, we need slip number 1A, the Fuck You Joe. Could you write us down for that? I'd make reservations every place I went.
Well, and then you buy one for every Joe. Yeah, I need right? slip A, slip B, and slip C.
Yeah. Joe 1, Joe 2, Joe 3.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, shit, he was making $96,000 an episode.
Oh, my God.
During that, for that $25 million a year? $96,000 an
crazy,
episode.
That's crazy money. But see, they offered Seinfeld $1 million an episode.
Yeah.
And,
well, I mean, inflation and shit.
I hated that show.
Oh, Rupert and I are going back through it.
I hated it.
Not at the same pace, but I'm going through it, too. We had a big discussion about whether Elaine's cuter with the early hair or the later hair.
So I finished, and then I went back.
And started again?
Solely for that purpose.
JLD's hot, yo.
Solely for that purpose, because I was just like, I got to the end of it, and I was like, you know, I think he's right. I think she's kind of hot. And then I was like, and now I'm back to the discussion. I can't decide which hair is hotter. I think I might like early hair better.
You just did that in the best Seinfeld voice I've heard in a long time. I can't decide which voice or which hair is hotter. Like, is it the bangs hair?
I got a hair indecision! Oh, you could get that, buddy. You could get that.
Surrender to now! God, JLD is hot. Leave it alone, man. So, although an active tennis player and golfer, Carson was also a heavy smoker and drinker. He smoked a reported 4 packs of Pall Malls a day.
Holy shit.
Which that means you're a fucking smoker.
Those are killers.
They're you dense cigarettes.
You're not fucking playing around.
The only thing I've had that was stronger was something called Spanish Black.
You
tobacco,
know what's the weird
which is
thing?
Fucking crazy.
You know what's the weird thing? Like, in terms of like any name brand cigarette,
right?
You can go into the shittiest 7-Eleven with
and
the
they got
3 day
Malls.
Old hot dogs, and Pall Malls are going to be the cheapest cigarette there. This motherfucker pulling down $25 million a year, and he's buying the cheapest cigarettes out there.
4 packs a day, you got to budget a little bit.
Actually, back then, I mean, it's Pall Malls were
higher end.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe they were. Maybe they were. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I had a pack of Pall Malls, like, I don't know, 2 years ago or something like that. I was like, these are really bad cigarettes. They're terrible.
Not good cigarettes.
They're like the worst, like, literally any other cigarette.
I don't know how you make a cigarette taste bad.
Tastes like ass.
But they did.
It's like Doral's
they don't taste good.
Be better.
None of them taste good.
Parliaments.
Yeah.
Parliaments. Let's just start out here and say none of them taste good. They all don't. None of them taste good. But there are some that
it's an acquired
are
taste. You
way worse than others.
Some like, yeah, Pall Malls are.
And
are you kidding me? There's like some cigarettes where it's like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever.
Oh, like Dunhill's or some shit.
Now, Dunhill's, like, they're too tight. You don't get enough of a
Sherman's.
John Player Specials.
Sherman's are really good.
John Player Specials.
I like Players.
You know what the best, like, Balkan Sabrinis. You can't get them here.
I haven't had those. I was big into Prince cigarettes for a while, which is a Danish brand.
Nah, I remember it was like, I went to, like, London, like, I don't know, 20 years ago or something like that. And it's like, I got off the plane and I was like, man, I don't know what the hell it is, but I really got to have a cigarette really bad. And we got to the hotel or something, and I was just like, you know, is there a tobacco store? And they were like, yeah, over there. And I was like, you got a fancy tobacco store there. Oh, a couple more blocks. And I went down there and I was like, what is the most expensive cigarette you have here? And they were like, these. And at the I don't know, the time is like $20 for a pack of these things or something like that. And I lit them up and I was like, oh, whoa, I better get out of here. I could spend all my money on these
things. You ever been to the Sherman Shop in New York?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like just walking in that place.
Oh, it's amazing. Oh,
it just smells good.
You know, I hadn't had a Nat Sherman. I mean, Nat Shermans are pretty good, but they're like, you know, they're not
the common good.
They're
like Dom Perignon. They're
like Don Hills. Like nobody say
they're more like
Don Hills are nice.
They're more like Veuve.
But like
Veuve, I don't know.
I had this guy working for me when I was contracting. He mail ordered in cartons of Nat Shermans. And this guy would bring them.
Dang.
And he'd be like, hey, Rupert, I got this carton of Shermans here. You want to try some of these? And I was like, oh. And it was like, he'd like, you know, because they come in flavors and all this sort of stuff. And I was like, oh, man. It was crazy. I was just like, you're spending your whole paycheck on these things, aren't you?
Right?
Some people do stupid shit like that.
Well, yeah. That's where I was with those Prince cigarettes. Yeah. As I walked into the tobacconist in Portland when I was making too much money for my own good.
Mm-hmm.
And said, no, I really like these Danish cigarettes. They're like, oh, we'll order you a carton. And I'd just buy a pack every day or two.
Well, at the time, like, you know, Nat Shermans weren't... Nat Shermans were as more expensive than regular cigarettes as Don Hills were.
Right.
Nat Shermans weren't any more than Don Hills. I just thought that Don Hills had some sort of tight filter on them or something. I don't know. You couldn't really get a draw off of those things. Great taste, though. Really great taste.
Really loved wonderful them. Cigarette.
And beautiful packaging. Just stunning packaging. Yes.
And that's where Players gets money, too, is they had nice packaging. Shermans also does nice packaging. Like, seriously. You currently only see that in the world of pre-rolled joints, but... Whatever. So, in March of 1999, Carson suffered a severe heart attack in his Malibu home. He was rushed to the hospital and underwent quadruple bypass surgery. Hence,
yeah, guess what smoking and drinking does to you?
Hence, he tried to kick the habits. didn't take really well, but anyhow, it was, as one expected, was a hit and miss. And on January 23rd of 2005... he died from complications from emphysema at Cedars-Sinai in L.A. His ashes were given to his then-wife, Alexis Moore.
Moss.
Alexis Moss.
Well, it's either that or Mass. And I don't want to think about that in a Catholic fucking sense.
So, and as per his wishes...
So you meant like overweight.
Alexis and Enzone.
Wow, yeah, that's going to be a name that forces you to stay slim.
As per his wishes, there was no funeral held because, as I mentioned earlier in one of the quotes, he was really kind of a private person, mm-hmm. even though we all saw him every single night.
Which would probably lead to that. Like, yeah. You've seen enough of me. I would like a little bit to myself, please.
And that's a lot of what it was. So there was no funeral held. Even if the world mourned such a great in the world of sharing people with people, there was just no celebration. His younger brother Dick survives him, as well as grows the family name by having produced Merv Griffin and the Wheel of Fortune.
Dick Carson.
Merv Griffin and the Wheel of Fortune, which is still on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I got, because
Dick Carson. There's a guy who, you know, you mind if I bring Dick Carson over? No, I hate him based upon his name. Well, sorry.
You know, that's the first name you want to see on, like, one of those old black and white westerns. You know, like Gunsmoke or Rifleman or something like that. Dick Carson. Boom. You know it's going to be something cheesy. There's going to be a little kid that idolizes him.
Right?
You know, there's going to be a moral in it.
It's like, you know, it's like, hey, you know what? I got to, like, dig a trench for some electrical pipe. Think I'll call Dick Carson?
No.
No.
Dick Carson.
That guy has soft
hands. Dick Carson.
So, I got to admit, I was never a huge Johnny Carson fan. It's probably because he was a little bit before my time. But I do remember,
like those sleepovers where you get to stay up late and watching the Carson show and seeing Uri Geller and the great Carsini and some of the shit that we talked about. And some of the riffs and some of the characters and the boringness, bland flavor of Ed McMahon. Like, it all just... Yeah, exactly. I remember staying up to watching that, and it being such a treat because I was a kid. And able to stay up past 10 or whatever it was. And in that way, he definitely influenced my life. And I think that he influenced so many other lives. Again, the list of comedians, and I just pulled the creme of the crop that he pushed to the forefront or got careers or helped establish careers for. The guy did a lot for the comedy world, and late night TV will never be the same because of him. And so I'll give him that credit.
One of the funniest, well, I don't know how funny it is, but to me is something that has stuck with me for years, was him doing a skit with Ed McMahon where Johnny Carson played a lab rat, and he's in a cage, and Ed's holding an interview with the lab rat. Like, yeah, it's great. I get fed every day. Okay, well, do you know what's happened to you? Well, they said something about being sterile, but I don't really know what that is. Really? Okay, so let me tell you what... Okay, so now what does being sterile mean to you? Never having to say I'm sorry. My guess is that was probably after a few of the marriages went south.
No more child support, yeah.
But, you know, Johnny Carson was one of those things where, you know, when you're a kid and this happened, I would have the TV in my bedroom set to really low volume. But, you know, your parents have this sixth sense that they know you're watching TV because they hear the laughter and stuff like that. And I got busted one time because they were thinking I'm watching something like Porky's. Nope.
Porn of our time.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, well, you're watching in between all the static. No. No, I'm watching Carson. And my dad just says, come on out. We're watching it too. Just curl up on the couch and get yourself a nest. Watch it. Because it's better to do it that way. Like, okay, here's a treat for you. And that's... You know, Carson was kind of a funny thing where you could actually get people involved in it. Your family could actually sit down and you could be treated, you know, it could be a little treat. It was something that everybody got used to. It was a family household name. Maybe some of the jokes, maybe some of the guests weren't exactly wholesome.
Maybe we had Joan on a lot.
But it was a staple. And, you know, I still watch the Johnny Carson. There's a whole television series, or a whole channel. Johnny Carson, 24 hours a day. And I'll put that shit on.
You're shitting me.
Nope.
No, let's go. All right, so I liked... Are you done?
And that's what I love about Johnny Carson. And go!
Okay, so, like, I never watched Carson. I've never been into interviews with famous people. I just really have never cared. So I didn't really, but every now and then I'd watch the opening monologue. And the thing that I loved about Carson was he did something that was sorely lacking today, and that he could come out, and generally his monologues were making fun of current events and that kind of thing. And the thing I loved about Carson was he was sort of the last of a dying breed, like, you know, Tim Russert or David Brinkley, not comedians, but people who were able to be impartial. And it didn't matter who the president was. He could be, you know, a Democrat or a Republican. He'd make fun of them both. And I loved that about him. And we don't have that anymore because everybody's got to be righteous. And Johnny didn't have to be righteous because he had a whole trail of ex-wives. This sounds like something that friends do.
Well, I thought we were friends.
I'm extremely uncomfortable with that.
I know. At the beginning hug.
Thank you.